Bays, four lines up from the bottom. Admasai mutalahachse. The Mishnah says that if the lokeach was nis'ane, he was cheated, we give him a window of opportunity to ask the experts to evaluate the object, the merchandise that he purchased, and to see, he'll figure out if he was cheated or not. After that window of opportunity passes, the assumption is mechila. Omar Rav Nachman, lo shanu ela lokeach. This limitation law that gives and establishes a deadline for the lokeach to claim onah only applies vis-a-vis lokeach, but as we've said, and we'll see it in the Mishnah, there's onah even vis-a-vis the mocher if he was underpaid. Aval mocher li olam chozer. We'll soon see the svar of Rav Nachman that in the case of the mocher, if he was cheated by the lokeach and underpaid, there's no limit, there's no statute of limitations that beyond a certain window of opportunity, he can no longer claim, oh no, that's not the case in the case of the mocher, but the mocher li olam choser, anytime subsequent to the mechira, when he finds out that he was underpaid, he can claim, oh no. Nemo misayale, shall we say that there is a proof to Rav Nachman from our Mishnah? Because in our Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon, when he paskined that onah is bishlish, up to a third, then the Tagrei Lud were very excited about that. But then, when they found out ultimately that Rabbi Tarfon allowed the Mis'ana to claim inui for the course of the entire day, Chazu l'divrei Chachamim, they went back to Paschal like the Chachomet. I amit bishlema mocher li olam chozer. If you accept the view of Rav Nachman, that with regard to the mocher's claim for not, there's no limit. Is li olam chozer, and here we're up to daf, nun aleph amid aleph. Is mishum hachi, now we understand chazru, why the Tagrei Lud went back to accept the sheet of the Chachomet. Because now, as a result of Rabbi Tarfon, they suffer a loss, because Rabbi Tarfon says that the Mis'ana, the lokeach who was cheated, has the opportunity to claim onah for the entire balance of the day. And Ein Lahem Hanah, they don't get a benefit from Rabbi Tarfon, because they would rather cut down the amount of time that the lokeach has to claim onah, like the Shitas Chachamim, that it's only Kadesh Yira L'Tagor, it's a very small window of opportunity. So now, if we assume, like Rav Nachman, that as far as the Mocher is concerned, he could be Chozer Liolam, then we understand why the Tagrei Lud were very, very upset, you know, in the final Maskana, with the psak of Rabbi Tarfon, Ela I Amrit Mocher Nami Kalokeach Domi. But if you're going to tell me that the Mocher, like the Lokeach, has just that limited window of time in which he, the Mocher, can claim onah, is my Nafkalumina, why should the Tagrei Lud find that they lost more from Rabbi Tarfon and then go back to accept Rabbanon? Ki hechi the avdilei Rabbanon takanta lokeach, hachinami avdilei Rabbanon takanta lemocher. Let's go back to Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon offered in his takon, in his framework, a special allowance, a takon on behalf of the lokeach to give him the entire balance of the day to claim onah. Then for sure, Rabbi Tarfon will apply the same yardstick and the same allowance, the same takana to the mocher. The mocher is not inferior to the lokeach. And l'tovas ha-mocher, Rabbi Tarfon is going to allow that the mocher could claim onah until the end of the day. Whereas according to the Chachamim, according to the Shitas Chachamim of Rabbi Tarfon, if the lekuchos were cheated by the Tagrei Lud, they cannot be chozer until up until but not beyond the Kedesha Yira L'Tagor. So why is it that because of Rabbi Tarfon's psak that he extended on behalf of the Lokeach the time of Chazorah beyond Kedesha Yira all the way to the end of the day, that shouldn't incur the wrath, the disappointment of the Tagri Lud, because Rabbi Tarfon is going to consistently allow for the Mocher to be Chozerbo ad until the end of the day. And there's no reason for the Tagri Lud to get upset about the allowance for the Lokeach up until the end of the day, because the same exact allowance will be accepted and implemented by established by Rabbi Tarfon with regard to the Mocher. And there's a certain consistency. And this is going to prove the Shita of Rav Nachman, that as far as the Mocher is concerned, this whole Takon is inapplicable. And even according to the Chachamim, the Mocher can be Chozer Liolam. And therefore the Hefseid of Rabbi Tarfon is in the Din of Lokeach, that he has the extended period of time to be Chozer. So Gemara rejects this proof, because Tagrei Lud lo shchiach deto, from the perspective of the Tagrei Lud, they're not worried about a mistake that the Lokeach might underpay them. These were experts in buying and selling. That was their dedication in life. That was their occupation. And it's very unusual for the Mocher, for the Tagri Lud, to make a mistake and accept less than the value of the object. They know exactly what the value of the object is. And therefore, the classical situation that the Tagri Lud have in mind is when the Lekuach, the Lokeach, is going to be cheated. And therefore, they'd rather go with the Chachamim that don't give the Lokeach much of a window of opportunity than take Rabbi Tarfon, who extends it for the entire day. The Gemara now tells a story with regard to this halacha, that the Mocher has rights to be Chozer Bo, Liolam, according to Rav Nachman. Ushpezichne de Rami Bar Chama, the host of Rami Bar Chama, Zabin Chamri, sold his donkey, Vitoid, he made a mistake, and he sold it cheap, and the buyer underpaid him by more than a sixth. Is Ashkeche, Rami Bar Chama finds him, Dahavi Otziv, and he's upset. Omale Amaya Tzivat, why are you so upset? Omale Zvini Chamra Vitai. I sold this Chamar for cheap, I was underpaid, and I made this mistake. Omale, so Rabbi Bechama says, why do you have to be upset about that? Zil Hadarbach. Go get back your Chamar and nullify the sale. That's the din of Ona Yosef Mishtus. Omale. So the host says to Rav Nachman, Rami Bar Chama, Hoshaheli Yosem Kadesh Erel Etagel Krovai. I've already passed that statute of limitations, that time period, the deadline is already passed. It's after the time period in which I can show it to the expert and get the evaluation. And therefore I no longer have rights to cancel the Mekach. Shadre Kamel Rav Nachman. So Rami Bar Chama sent him to Rav Nachman for Psak. Amalei Rav Nachman said to him, Lo Shanu, when did the Chachamim establish this deadline, this window of opportunity to be Chozer Bo and claim Ona, that's only Kedei, meaning Kedei Yira L'Tag, that's only El Lokeach, that's only vis-a-vis the Lokeach. Avol Mocher Liolam Chozer, you as the seller of the donkey, you are not limited by this time period. You could always come back and adduce evidence that you were underpaid and claim Ona. My time, and now the Gemara wants to understand the logic here. Why is there a distinction between the Lokeach and the Mocher in this context? And the answer is Lokeach, Mikcho Biyado. It's Lokeach who's holding on to the object. He just bought it, and now he possesses it. For Kol Hecha the Ozel, Machvile. Wherever he goes, he can show it to someone, to other experts in the field who can evaluate it, to his relatives that happen to know what its value is. They'll notify him, has he overpaid or has he not. But Mocher, he doesn't have the object in his hand. He's already transferred the object over to the buyer. is ad misrami leizvinto kizvinte. He doesn't have the object in his possession to show it to the experts and evaluate them. Then the only time down the line where he's going to be able to figure out that he was underpaid for the object, that's only if somebody else sells him something, and or the object that he sold in a different form, and something very similar on the same market value wavelength, came into his possession, and then he was able to figure out that what he sold earlier, who knows how long ago, he was underpaid, because it's really more, worth more than that. V'yoda ita ilota, and then he's going to know that he made a mistake. So again, he doesn't have immediate access to an assessor, you know, to get the exact evaluation and figure out whether he was underpaid or not, because he doesn't have the object in his hand. Down the line, he'll find a similar object, and he'll figure out, based on that object, what the object that he sold months ago was really, really worth, and how he was underpaid. The only factor that I don't see the Gemara's calculating here is the factor of inflation. Maybe it went up in price. Of course, in our society, that's common. You know, due to inflation, you know, there's a fluctuation of the price of items on almost on a daily basis. I'm exaggerating, but not by much. But I guess back in the day, inflation was not such a heavy consideration. And it would be an interesting research topic to figure out, in the context of the laws of Onoah, how does inflation impact on Onoah? Which means that if the sale took place at time X, and then the claim of Onoah took place at time Y, months down the line, how do we know that there was any cheating here? Maybe the object went up in value, went down in value in that interim period. Again, in the case of an Asana Lokeach, there's not much of an interim period here, because the Lokeach has got to figure out immediately, you know, what is the market value and the price of this object that he bought. Now the Gemara tells another story regarding Onoah, and based on this story, the Gemara is going to formulate a chidush as far as Baal HaBayis is concerned. In most cases that we've discussed until now, the seller was a professional seller. But now we're going to discuss a case where you bought something from a Baal HaBayis. He gave up of his own personal articles. Hahu Gavra, Davi Nokat, Varshche Lizabuni. Varshche is translated here based on Rashi and Erevin as Chagoras Meshi, some belt made out of silk. And it's kind of a rare item. And if a person owns such an item, he doesn't usually want to part with it. But in this case, I guess the owner was in desperate need for funds. And so he held on to this very beautiful and rare belt of silk belt, and he tries to sell it. Kari Shita yells out, and you know, he has a foghorn. He's willing to sell this for shisha zuzim, for six zuzim. Now the true market price, the shavi hamsha, is only five zuzim. But again, since it's a relatively rare object, and since the mocher in this case is so desperate for funds, he jacks up the price from five zuzim, which is the true price, to six zuzim. Now, even though he's demanding six zuzim, the buyers, the potential buyers in the market out there, they realize that it's not worth six zuzim. They realize that if somebody would offer him five and a half zuzim, Avishakli would accept such an offer. Asahu Gavra, so a person came along, one potential buyer. The Amr, he said to me, Ahiv Nale Chamsha Upalga, if I pay you five and a half. So what was this buyer thinking? Because when it says the Amr, the Rishonim talk about who's he talking to. Some would say he's talking in front of two Eidim, to try to already indicate that he's not happy about paying five and a half for something that's really worth in the market five. So again, Omar, he says to himself, "I yahivnale chamshu palga. if he'll accept my offer of 5.5, havi mechila. 5.5 doesn't give me a ratio of 1/6. It's a ratio of 1/10, right? Because it's an extra half a zuz on something that's worth 5 zuzim. So that would be mechila according to the law, because it's less than 1/6. And then if I give him 5.5, I'll never get back my half a zuz, which he's cheating me. So you know what? I got an idea. Brilliant chap. Etein le shita. He's asking for 6. I'm going to give him 6. Fi et be'eli dine. And then I'll be able to sue him in a court of law. I'm going to actually summon him immediately after the purchase. Kadesh yira letagor. Within that short window of opportunity. And he's going to have to return to me that zuz. Why? Because the value of the object is 5. I'm paying him 6. And if that be the case, then there is an onah of shtus. Now, if you recall, we had 2 definitions of onah, and how do you calculate the 1/6? This Gemara is operating with Shmuel's definition, which is called shtus mo. So he's overpaying 1, correct, because it's only worth 5. And the most that he's paying is 6. So 1/6 is the ratio of onah. And some want to claim that based on this Gemara, we see that the sugya paskins like Shmuel, shtus, mos. Fine. Now, we see that there's a brilliant chap here on the part of Lokeach. Also, Lekami de Rovo. So now, the Lokeach purchases this object, the silk belt. He purchases it at the price of 6 with an overcharge of 1, and he comes to Rav and he says, "I want to get my money back. You know, let him pay me the 1." You know, if he would have offered 5.5, he'd have no recourse because 5.5 is a cheating of 1/10, and therefore he has no recourse to claim onah. But now he's smart; he paid a little bit more. He paid 6, an extra 1, and the ratio of 1/6 is enough for him to claim that he wants that 1 back. Amalei, but to his surprise, the trick didn't work, because Amalei Rava says to him, Lo Shanu, when do we say in the Mishnah the laws of Onah, Ela Belo Kech Menat Tagor, is when you buy something from a professional seller. Let's call him a retail, you know, he buys and he sells. And in such a case, he, the Tagor, buys Schor, and he's very eager to sell it. That's how he makes his living. And therefore, the laws of Onah kick in to make sure that the seller gets a fair price and the buyer gets a fair price. But Aval Belo Kech Mibalabai, so you're buying something not from a professional retailer who's in the sales business, but rather from a Balabayas who's basically parting now. He's selling to you one of the kalim that he could use, that he has, shall we say, an attachment to. He's got this is his big day meshi. Is then ain lo olav onah. In such a case, the buyer realizes up front that the mocher is going to overcharge. That's a pella, this Gemara. And why is he overcharging? Because again, keep in mind that if a person sells one of his own personal items, what's called in Hebrew klei tashmisho, he's doing it only because he's desperate for funds. And he's going to want to make a profit, a serious profit on this deal to keep himself going, keep himself afloat financially. And therefore, it's as if the mocher made this tnai up front to the mekach, and he says to him, look, I know that I'm overcharging you, but I'm an askei, nevertheless, in this context, you should know I'm selling it to you. And therefore, you won't be able to claim onah, because I'm telling you up front when you buy it that it's worth half the price of what I'm selling you. So therefore, when somebody sells this belt, you know, this silk belt, and he's a baal bayis, he's not in the professional sales business, there's no din of onah. We can anticipate, and even the buyer can anticipate, that if this seller is so desperate to sell one of his klei tashmishim, he's going to obviously demand an exorbitant price for it, because that's what he needs. He needs the money. It's not like a case of a lokeach min atagor, you know, in a professional context of buying and selling, where we're assuming that you know, the market value is going to control, is going to determine what kind of prices are going to be charged and what kind of prices are going to be paid. That's all good in the case of Lokech Min HaTagor, but in the case of Lokech Min Bal HaBayis, says Rava, all those rules go down the tubes. And there's no claim of onah here. The Lokech knows up front that if he's buying from a Bal HaBayis, a very special, you know, Bal HaBayis sells him his heirloom Kiddush cup. You know, he knows that the Bal HaBayis is going to try to jack up the price. And therefore there's no onah in such a case. The Gemara now brings another Maisa, which parallels the first Maisa. Hahu gavra davinoket kipe lizabune. He's actually selling his jewelry, his nose rings, and kari shitin. He's calling out that he wants 60 zuz for apparently, you know, maybe this piece of jewelry is a work of art, something very beautiful, something very special, and it should command 60. But vishavi chamshin, even though the demand for 60 on the part of the mocher seems to be fair, but nevertheless we know that in the market you can get it for 50. And therefore in this case the seller is cheating out the potential buyer. Comes along a person and he makes this calculation that the mocher would be willing to settle for 55. He doesn't have to demand, he doesn't have to be paid 60, even though that's what he's asking for. Avi Shukli would accept a lower offer of 55. And also Gavin, he says to himself, let me figure this out. If I'll pay him 55, which I know he'll accept, Havi Mechila, then he's overcharging me only by 5. And 5 over 50 is 1/10. There's no recourse to claim onah, so it'll have to be mechila. And therefore, etein lei shitim, let me give him 60, which is 10 over the price. It's overpriced by 10. And that 10 will give me 1/6. Et pei ledini, now I can be toveim in the bezdin. And now I'm gonna get back my 6th. Now I can claim onah mamish. After he paid the onah mamish of the extra 10 on 50, he comes to Rav Chisda expecting Rav Chisda to say that he's going to get back his 10. Better than 5. So Rav Chisda told him, lo shanu el lokech min HaTagor v'lokech min HaBal HaBayis ein lo olav onah. He invokes the same opinion that we saw before, that when it comes to personal artifacts, personal belongings that have a function, and there's a reason why a person would want to hold on to them. He doesn't just, he's not out there, you know, doing business with massive, massive amounts of import and export. Yeah, he's selling one of his own personal private, let's say he has a painting, you know, that he inherited, it's an heirloom. If he's selling it, you know, it's very hard for him to sell it. He's hard-pressed for money. But, you know, the buyer knows that the price is going to be a very hefty price because that's what he needs. The seller needs the money. Otherwise, he wouldn't part from one of his favorite objects. Amalei Rav Dimi Yishar. I agree with this. V'chein Omer Rav Rabbi Elazar Yishar. It's like saying Yashar Koach. Yishar means it's straight. It's well thought out. There's a difference between a tagor who's constantly buying and selling professionally, and a personal Bal HaBayis selling one of his prized possessions. Again, we're not talking about, as we'll soon see, the Bal HaBayis is selling a possession which is, you know, is mass manufactured and has, you know, there's no pressing need for him to hold on to it. That's something different. But here we're talking about, you know, imagine if you inherited a Rembrandt, you know, you're not going to part with it unless you get big bucks, because it's hard for you to part with it. You're only doing it because you're desperate for the funds. The Gemara now asks Akasha, how can you tell me that there's no onah to a Bal HaBayis? We didn't get to this Mishnah yet, but the Mishnah says, Kishem sheyesh onah lehejot, kach yesh onah l'tagor. So we now have the Mishnah that seems to formulate an equal din of onah for both a hedjot and a tagor. My man hejo lava balbais. Doesn't the word hejo as opposed to taga refer to a balbais? We have no other interpretation of this Mishnah. Again, the Mishnah we haven't gotten to yet, but so how do we reconcile the fact that we say that there's no onah to a balbais with this Mishnah that says beferush that there is onah to a balbais? Kishem sheyesh onah lehejod, kach onah letagor. Rav Chizda wants to now defend himself from his original position and stave off this kasha from the Mishnah Lahalan. Rav Chizda be Tzaid Riyasa. We're not talking about the Balbai selling a precious heirloom, a rare commodity with a personality and a character of its own. But rather we're talking about big day canvas. You know, this is the low, this is the basic, you know, bare basic fundamental clothing that people wore. Big day canvas. In Aramaic it's called Tzaid Riyasa. In English, it's called hemp, H-E-M-P, hemp. And these are things that are bought and sold all the time. You know, go on the lists, you know, that they publish, and you'll see it. And all schora, basically, which a person sells, even if he's a private citizen, he's a balabais, he's not a professional tagar, all of those sales are subject to the law of onah. The only, right? I'm not sure if I said it right. Let me say it again. When a Baal Bais is selling some private possession that he owns, not for the sake of a profession of buying or selling, he's not an Ish Mischar, but he's only selling it because he's desperate for funds and he's selling one of his own Kalim, so then it depends. If it's Big Day Canvas, these hemp clothing, they're sort of base bottom, there's nothing, you know, nothing different about them or unique about them. You're going to sell it for the known price. You know, take a look in the thing. It's like, you know, you have a catalog that tells you the exact price. And in that case, then there is a claim of onah. There's no emotional investment here in the Tzad Riyasa, in these big day canvas. But if, on the other hand, he sells you not big day canvas, but rather a kli mamish, if the sale is on something that's very beloved to him, it's cherished, it's unique, it's singular, it's an heirloom, whatever it might be, that's called mechilas onah. Then the lokech realizes that the mocher, out of desperation to have to part with this special unique object, he's going to charge the world. You know, sky's the limit. But what the Mishnah says is yesh onah lehejo, that's talking about a case of Tzaid Riyasa, of, you know, a standard pair of jeans. You know exactly what it's worth on the market. There's no emotional attachment investment here. If he's selling it, he's selling it. Then he'll get the market price. If he overcharges, then there's going to be, oh no. Avol money de tashmishe de yakiri ole, but some sort of keli, which is chaviv olav. Yakiri means chaviv. It's so he cherishes it, he loves it, and yet he has to sell it. Islam is damin luhui labit dami visay. The only reason he's going to sell this object is because he's going to be getting, he's going to be raking in some very serious money, way beyond the true market value of the object. And in that context, we understand that all the stories that we had before, that the person who's selling, you know, the silk belt, or a person who's selling some sort of a nizamim, a tachshit, you know, a very rare piece of jewelry, then he's only doing it out of desperation, and there's an understood, built-in understanding of onah here. It's if he said to the lokeach, you should know, there's going to be onah here, and you have to buy it afal piche. Okay, Rabbo, so we're up to the Mishnah. Now, as far as this Mishnah is concerned, we're going to have a review of many things that were brought up in the sugya before, but now we're seeing the original in the Mishnah. Because originally in the previous Mishnah, we were talking about the shear of onah, which engenders a chiyuv of, at the very least, to be repaid, to get back the money that he was cheated on. and possibly even in certain cases to break up and void the Mekach. Our Mishnah wants to know, up until, we've already established up until what point he can claim Ono, but now we want to know who could claim Ono. And again, we've touched on this before. The Mishnah says, Echad alokech v'echad amocher yeshlem Ono. Whoever was cheated, either the buyer because he overpaid or the seller because he was underpaid, either one of them can claim Ono. Kishem sha'ono lehejot kach ono letagu. The second point in our Mishnah is that Ono applies to both a hejot who is selling and parting with some personal item of his, object of his, and a tagger who's buying and selling professionally. In both cases, there's Ono. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ain't Ono letagor. Now, what's Rabbi Yehuda saying to this professional buyer? Is he being more machmer on him, more makel on it? This we'll see. Two opinions in the Gemara. Then the Mishnah now wants to clarify which one of the two can break up the Mekach. And he says the following, Misha Hutal Olav is Yodal El Yona. The one who suffered this fraud, he's the one who has the upper hand, and he has a koach gadol v'yadiv, and he has two choices in front of him. He can either decide that since he overpaid, he wants his money back, but not only that, not only rotza omer lo tainli maos, I give me my money back, oh, he can even go a step further, tainli masha ini sani. That I'm not... Wait, there are two possibilities. Either he could say to him, give me my money back, and I'll give you the object back, meaning he could void the entire Mekach. Or he could say, Tenli Mashi Nisani, just give me back the amount of money that I was cheated. And the Mekach stands as it is. Those two choices are given to the Lokeach because he suffered the overpaying. He suffered the cheating and the Ono. And what we have to understand is, what does the Mishnah hold in the case of Nis'ana Mocher? Because he's talking about getting back his money. That means we're talking about the Lokeach. What would be the din of the Mocher? Now, the word Ma'osai certainly indicates that we're talking about the Lokeach, because if it would have been the Mocher, it would have said, Tainli Asachefetz Shemacharti Lucha. That it doesn't say. And the question is going to be, and this is going to be the main part of the sugya on this last, you know, above in the Mishnah, is whether or not the mocher could also claim that I was underpaid. I mean, that's certainly, those choices should be given to the mocher, no less than lokech, because your opening line in the Mishnah is that echad lokech vechad mocher yeshlem din ono. So we'll wait for that till the sugya. The Gemara now says, Minani Mili, how do we know that the din of Ono applies to both Lokech and the Mocher? I mean, this is the premise that we've been operating since we started the Sugi of Ono. The Tan Rabbanon, the Brisa derives it from a Pasuk of Ayikrach of Hey. I'll read the entire Pasuk. It says, V'chisimku memkar, mimkar la misecha, o kano miyad misecha, al tonu ishes achiv. And the Torah says, V'chisimkaru, Mimkar la misecha, and that certainly indicates that we're talking to the mocher. And when we say in the rest of the pasuk, it says al tonu, we're addressing the seller, and we're saying to don't overcharge the poor buyer. Says the Braisa, ainli ela shenis ana alokeach. All we know in this pasuk is that the mocher was in violation of lo sonu, and he overcharged the lokeach, and therefore there's a din of ono. Nis'ana mocher minayin. But in this pasuk, it doesn't say anything about the lokeach underpaying the mocher. Everything is about the fact that he's coming. You know, he's coming to overcharge. He's overcharging the seller. What if the seller was underpaying? How do we know this? Talmud Lomar, because the pasuk says O Kano. Now, this pasuk is talking about clearly the Kone, is Altonu. And the Torah now is addressing in the words Okano, the buyer. And yet, in the same pasuk of Okono, it says Altonu Ish Es Achiv. Apparently, the Iser of Onah is addressed not only to the Vechisim Keru Mimkalam Isecha, meaning to the Mocha, but also to the Okono, meaning Lokeach. Now the Gemara wants to know, why do we need taka two psukim, one for Onas Mocha and one for Onas Lokeach? If we had one, not the other, what would have been the Havamina to exclude the other? I mean, let's be consistent about it. If there's a dinamo notch, it should apply straight across the board. Says the Gemara, V'yitzuch l'michtav lokech, v'yitzuch l'michtav mocha. We need both to establish Ono in both the case of the mocha was cheated by being underpaid and the case where the lokech was cheated by being overpaid. D'kasa rachmana mocha. If the Torah had imposed this violation of Ono addressing the mocha, then, you know what, we should have said that this is a special din and a special isur incumbent upon the mocher, mishum de kimle bizvinte. He certainly, lechor, should be the bucky who should know that that what he's selling, he's selling at the overcharging price. You know, he knows this, and therefore we should be very careful here and put in the chains, the bounds, the and bind him in such a way that he won't go off the top and overcharge by 200%. And the mocher realizes what the price, the market price is of this schora. He knows how much he paid to buy the schora. And now he's going to deliberately overcharge? I mean, we understand very well that the Torah had to impose the Iser of Lo Sonu. But now let's switch around to the other side of the table. Let's go over to the side of the buyer. Are we going to say that the buyer, who's not a bucky, and he really doesn't know the precise market value of the object that he's paying for, is then emo lo azare rachmana belo sonu? No element here of guilt here. As if to say that the lokech deliberately underpaid and cheated the mocher. He's really a nice guy. He's naive. He doesn't know the exact market. That's not his business. He's just buying an object. He doesn't know the true value of it. And if he makes an offer and the mocher accepts that offer, then I would say that there's no, logically I might have said there's no din of onah. So this is fascinating. You know, the Gemara is saying that Dafka in Mocher there's Ono because he's the bucky. He absolutely knows what it's worth and he's overcharging. We got to stop him. We got to put the brakes on him. But in the case of Lokeach, you know what? Nebuch the Lokeach underpaid not as a deliberate violation of the Yisro Ono. He did it because he doesn't know what the value of this object is. He's just a Lokeach. He's not in the business. He's not in buying and selling, imports and exports. And therefore, I would think that maybe the Torah would not impose an Iser Onah on the Lokeach. And the Ikos of Rachmana Lokeach, the Torah in the flip case had told me Lokeach, is there any reason why the Lokeach is more subject to Onah than the Mocher? Says the Gemara, Mishum Tekakani. Because he's getting a profit here, so to speak. I don't mean I'm not talking about a monetary profit, but that too maybe because he can resell it at a high price. I don't know, but he's the really the benefactor of it. He's getting the most benefit. He's getting all the pleasure. He's buying an object which now he's going to be able to hold on to long term and enjoy the benefits of the Amri Yinshi, like phrases, you know, sometimes we learn from idiomatic phrases that the common people use. Here's another case. People say Zavnis Kanis, but Abude Kamovit. And Zavnis Kanis is addressing the Lokeach. And what does it mean, Zavnis Kanis? The word Kanis, I think here in this context means a successful purchase. You know, he made a profit. He did a good deal. So there's logical reason to be more harsh on the mocher than the lokeach. The mocher knows the value. He's deliberate in overcharging. The lokeach is not aware. He's naive. And he certainly is not trying to cheat when he underpays. He's just trying to work out the best deal for himself. And now, in the flip side, because of Rachmana lokeach, mishum de kakani, in the case of the lokeach, he's getting the better deal. As we said before, this idiomatic phrase, the amri inshi zavnis kanis, when you buy something, it's profit. You know, in a sense, you've turned money, which comes and goes, into some, you know, converted into some object which will stay for life, so to speak. So he's the one who really benefits over here. And if he's the one who's benefiting, then we should be very demanding of him for the standards of justice, of honesty, should be that much more harsh and more demanding. And the Torah therefore says, don't cheat the mocher. You know, you're the one who's benefiting here. The mocher is the one who's avala mocher di abudei ka movid. You know, he's the one who's losing here. He's parting with an object, and instead he's getting cash. And cash is something, as Rashi points out over here, that is here today and gone tomorrow. Rashi Dibra Maskel Zovin Ovid Shiyuchlua Yikolu Amos Biyitzia. You know, cash, we say, goes down the black hole. There's no staying power. And therefore, maybe the Torah would be more compassionate on behalf of the mocher, allowing him to get a little bit more profit here without onah. Maybe he's not included in the violation of lo sonu, and therefore tzricha, we need a special pasuk to include the mocher. Again, the Rishonim have a problem. Why is the mocher really getting a hefsed? In a sense, he's the one who's buying and selling. He's a retailer, so he buys from one. And with that money, he sees a better deal and he buys from the other. Why should we have such compassion for him? So the Rashba says, what the Gemara really means is that since there are cases of a mocher who's not a retailer, and there's no logical onah, you know, as we discussed earlier, in the case of a Baal Bais who sells clay tashmisho, he sells a unique object that he really doesn't want to part with, so he overcharges. Once there's no law of overcharging in that case, in the case of a mocher balabayis who's selling one of his kli tashmisho, then we're going to extend that to include every case of a mocher. It's kind of like a lo chilka Torah svara, and maybe there was no onah. The Gemara has this svara kolshi that we need a pasuk for onah in the case of the mocher as well. The bottom line is that the Isra Onah, as the Mishnah formulates it here at the beginning, Echad Alukech, Echad Amokhi, Yeshlem Onah, the law of Onah, the Isra Onah, applies to both the Mocher and the Lukech. Now the Mishnah goes on and tells us that there's a din of Onah both for the Hedjot and for the Tagor. And Rabbi Yehuda says something astonishing which has to be analyzed, and that is Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein Onah LeTagor. As far as the seller is concerned, there's no din of onah. So the Gemara says, Mishum shu tager ein lo onah. That doesn't make any sense. You know, you can't be prejudiced against a tagor just because he's a soicher and say that there's no din of onah. And what we mean is prejudice against the tagor. If, let's say, this mocher, who's a professional retailer, and he was undercharged. I'm sorry, he was underpaid. And he undercharged. And that was an accident, and he fell in, and therefore he wants his money back. Just because he's a tagor, we're not going to allow him to have recourse to the laws of onah. Ain onah le tagor. There's no din of onah on behalf of a tagor. I mean, if there's an Isra Onah vis-a-vis a regular guy, a rank-and-file citizen, why not against the Tagor? What's this Chalushim Tagor? And the Gemara answers, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav, B'Tagor Safsar Shon. Our Mishnah is talking about a Safsar who's always buying and he's always selling. And when he buys, you know, he may be willing to pay a little bit more than its actual value because he needs that money to buy what he thinks is even a better deal. and he may sell at an undervalue, because even though he's getting less than the market value, the market price, but he wants to take that money and invest it, that's the nature of his business. So in some cases, he'll pay more than the market value. In other cases, he might be paid less than the market value. Is my timer. So why should I assume, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that in this case of a safsa, there is no din of onah? Is made the yadas vinte kamashavi. He's very well aware of the price. That's his business. That's his profession. He's a baki. And nevertheless, he's going now to buy something and pay more, or to sell something and sell it at less. The reason he's doing it is v'achuli achal gabei. He has. There's an assumption here of a built-in mechila. You'll ask me, hi dezavna hochi. Why is he selling it at a cheap price? Mishum disramilei zvinachrini. He needs the money now to invest it in a better deal that comes along. So he's willing to sell X, you know, merchandise X, at a cut price in order to get money to buy Y, you know, merchandise Y, that he thinks he can make, there's a greater profit margin. And that's why, for example, you'll find stores that have a sale, a crazy sale, and the reason is they need that money because they have the owner of the store or the company has a wonderful opportunity to invest. So therefore, even though they're selling it at a cut price, there's a built-in mechila. Or the Gemara says, Hashta miya kahadar bay. After the mechila, now they come by and they have a change of heart. And they decided, you know what? I sold this at a slash price. I was cheated. I was underpaid. I want to claim onah. Says Rabbi Yehuda, no. You already agreed to the deal, knowing full well that you're going to be underpaid because you know the value, the true market value. That's your profession. We're not going to have any compassion for you now that you changed your mind. Since there was a built-in mechira b'shas mechira, the mechila was chal in the mechira, now you can't change your mind. So in that case, our interpretation based on Rav Nachman of Rabbi Yehuda and Mishnah is l'chumra, to be harsh against the Tagua. Rav Ashi says just the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda is coming to be mekil on behalf of the Tagua. Umayah, what does he mean? Ein l'tagar onah. It means that the limitations of onah, let's say, for example, we said many times that if it's pachos mishtus, then there is no onah. Those limitations don't apply to a tagor. Tagor always, absolutely, is guaranteed the rights to onah. She'eino b'toras onah. He's not limited by the limitations of the laws of onah, as other people are. In the case of other people, afilu b'pachos michtei onah, In the case of the Tagor, even in Pochos Mikidei Onah, Chose, the Tagor has a right to cancel the deal, even though the underpaying was less than a sixth of the value. He's not limited by the laws that apply to a regular hedgeot, that in Pochos Mishtus, it's Mekach Kayim without any possibility of being Mevatel the Mekach, as we saw back on Daf Mem Tesavid Beis. And the reason for this is, according to Rav Ashi, and Rashi seems to say it when he says the chay of tluyim b'kach, means that the Chachamim made a special takana, new gedarim, and definitions of onah for a tagor, on behalf of a tagor. This is his livelihood. Chay of tluyim b'zeh, his whole parnasa depends upon him. We don't want to get him into a situation where he took a marginal, minimal loss, and therefore he's going to suffer that loss. The buying and selling is his source of income, and we can't cut him out of that. We have to afford him and allow him with a much broader schus tvias anah, how would you say in English? We'll call it a right to get back his money and cancel the deal, because otherwise he's not going to be able to survive it. And in Rav Ashi's frame of reference, Ein l'tagar toras onah, it means that we're not going to, as Rav Nachman would have it, assume a premise that the tagor was aware exactly of the price, and he knew from the get-go that he was getting underpaid, and therefore there was mechila, as Rav Nachman has it. But rather, we're going to assume that any sort of mechila, again, I'm not sure here. You can go one of two ways. Either Avashi is denying the very mitzius, the very umdara and the reality assumption and description of Rav Nachman, that the Tagger definitely knows exactly what his chur is worth. I don't know if Rav Ashi buys into that. Maybe he questions that premise. Or in Timtzalom, if you'll insist that Rav Ashi, also accepts that premise, that the Tagger certainly is a buck, he knows the value of his chur and how much he should be charging. But nevertheless, we want to give him that extension of even beyond the mechila at the time of the mechira, to somehow retroactively undermine that mechira and cancel it in order for him to have a parnasa, to a chayav. In any event, the Gemara concludes that the textual proof kicks in on behalf of support for Rav Nachman. Tanya Kavosi, the Rav Nachman. We have a brisa that supports Rav Nachman. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Tagor Ein Lo Onam Ipnei Shehu Baki. That a Tagor cannot claim I was underpaid because he knows the exact value. And certainly if he sold it at a cheap value, then he's doing it with a mechila. He wants to get that money. He has a better investment, as we said before. And therefore there's mechila. The Mishnah now says, "Mi shehutal olav yado al helyona," that the one who is cheated has the upper hand. He has two alternatives. He could either say, "Give me back my money," or he could say, "He can either say, "Give me back my money," and therefore the sale is canceled, or he could say, "Just give me back that ona." You know, if I paid an extra 1 over 5, 1 over 6, then give me back that 1. Now, what the Gemara wants to do at this point is compare the Mishnah to the two shitas in the Brisa that was quoted back on Daf Nun Amud Beis. The Brisa quotes Rav Nosson as saying that Ona pochos mishtus, nikne mekach, yeser al shtus batel mekach, shtus kana umachzer ona. That's Rabbi Nosson. So if you read Rabbi Nosson carefully, in the case of shtus, it seems like the kinyan is definitely binding, it's irreversible, but the chiddush of shtus is that the nes'an has rights to get back the money that he was cheated. This whole choice situation, which we see in the Mishnah, that the Mis'ana could even break up the Mekach, that doesn't seem to reflect Rabbi Nosson. On the other hand, the Brisa then quotes the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and he says, Yad Mocher Al Yonah. It sounds like only the Mocher has this option of either canceling the sale or just getting back, you know, the differential, the Ona. There doesn't seem to be such a choice on behalf of the Lokeach. So the Gemara says, Mani Masnisen, our Mishnah, that on the one hand, in the case of Shtus, allows for a Bittul Mekach, on the other hand, allows for a Bittul Mekach, even on behalf of the Lokeach, because it says, Mi Shehutal Olav Yadal Yona, is Lo Rabbi Nosson, Velo Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. The Gemara explains its question. That we can't find the author of our Mishnah. E Rabbi Nosson, if the Mishnah is reflecting the Shita Rabbi Nosson, is then Masnis and Ktani Rotza, which means that the Mis'ana has the Rotza, and he could either cancel the deal and void it, or he could at least get back his money. Brisa, the Brisa in Rav Nosson says, Lo Ktani Rotza doesn't give him the option of breaking up the Mecher. All it says is Kana. The Mecher is Kayam et Shtus, and Machzer Ona. You can just get back the differential. So Rav Nosson is clearly not the author of that Mishnah. The E, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, then we're in deep trouble here, because Masis and Ktani Lokeach. The Mishnah affords these two options even for the Mis'ana. If the Mis'ana is Lokech, he overpaid. And When I say even, I should say dafka. In other words, I made a mistake there. And if I added the word even, let me just clarify this. When the Mishnah uses the term Ratza omelo tainli ma'osai, give me back my money, clearly the Mishnah is addressing the lokeh who paid the money. And he was cheated, he wants his money back, he overpaid for the item. There's no indication whatsoever in the Mishnah that the mocher has a right to claim either this or the that, you know, that choice, the two alternatives in the context of another. Brisa Ketani, in Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he's talking about the mocher. He says up front, this anem mocher, that the mocher himself is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Yad Mocher Al Yona. So this Yad Al Yona, according to the Mishnah, is referring to Lokech. According to the Brisa of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, is referring to the mocher. So we cannot attribute the authorship of our Mishnah to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So Rabbi Loza Eino Chinami. This Mishnah reflects neither Rabbi Nosi nor Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Onazu Eino Nidei Mishnah, which means that we have to introduce a third Shita here. A third Tana. Now, I just want to add my own comment here. The third Tana is intuitively correct. You know, it's the principle, the din that he's working with, this third Tana, is very logical, very rational, because he's saying that the dinim of Mishnas Ana, right? Misha Hutal all of Yodal Yona, that the Nisana has these two options, that din should apply not only to Hachzoras Dmeono, but also to Bitla Mekach, and it should apply to both the Mocher and the Lokeach. So that Tana Shlishi is somebody that we can applaud, and in a surprise, you know, vote, he might turn out to be the most popular of all the candidates. Rabba Omar, but Rabba, and we'll see Rava as well, wants to interpret the Mishnah in the light of either Rabbi Nosson or Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, rather than the fourth position, that there's another Tana that we don't know about. You know, we don't want to invent a new Tana if we can avoid it. Maybe we could reinterpret. We could reinterpret Rabbi Nosson in such a way that Rabbi Nosson could be reconciled with our Mishnah. That's what Rabba wants to do. Rabba's going to do the same for Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So let's get Rabba down first. Rabba Omar, Li Olam Rabbi Nosson Hi Utni Nami Bebraisa Rotza. In other words, what you have to add to the Braisa Rabbi Nosson is the word Rotza, which means the possibility of Bitla Mekach. Even though in our text of the Braisa, all we have is kana umachzer ono, as if to say that the only rotzon we could have on the part of the nisana is only to get back his money, but not to be mevat to the mekach. We have to add this rotzah, which again, as I said before, is intuitively logical, that Rabbi Nosson accepts within the context of ono the possibility of voiding the mekach. Rava amar liolam Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi hi, let's perhaps fit the Mishnah into Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, or Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi into the Mishnah, as you like. Umay deshayer masnisin kam mefarish bebraisa. The Mishnah, after all, addressed the case where the mocher was in Isana. The braisa addressed the case. Well, one second, let me get this straight. The Mishnah says that the who's demanding his most back is lokeach. Whereas the Braisa of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says that Yad Mocher Al Yona, and this is one is mashal than the other. It's really one picture. The Mishnah left out the Mocher as the Misana, and the Braisa of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi left out the Lokeach, but they both complement each other. Now, in the light of Rabba and Rava, we may be able to ask the following question. What is the machlokas recorded in the Braisa between Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and Rabbi Nosson? And at the end of it, at the bottom line, it seems that they're all saying the same thing. Although perhaps we could say that according to Rabbah, the machlokas boils down to the question of nis'ana lokeach, that according to Rav Yehuda Nasi, there's no privilege on the part of lokeach to go in one of two ways. According to Rava, perhaps we could say that the machlokas between Rav Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Nosson is whether or not the Yod Al Yonah includes the option of Bitul HaMekach. In any event, Omer of Ashi, Daiko Nami, we could support the Sheet of Rava, that our Mishnah reflects the Sheet of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, De Katani, because in the Reish of the Mishnah it says Echad Alokeach, the Echad Al Mocher, Yesh Lem Onah. So clearly the Mishnah itself, even though in the Sefer the Mishnah only addresses the case of Nisana Lokeach, is talking about even Nisana Mocher, is therefore Mefarish Lilokeach, even though the Mishnah spells out the case of Lokeach, but Shmamino Deshire Shire Lemocher, the Mishnah left out, which is called Shiri Mishire. Sometimes the Mishnah doesn't go through every single case, but certainly the case of Nis'ana Mocher is also included in the Mishnah Shema Minah. Based on the ratio of the Mishnah, we can indicate the Sefer of the Mishnah. Again, it's a little bit strange that the Sefer emphasizes the Lokeach and doesn't whisper a word about the Mocher. I mean, that Adarabba would seem to indicate that the din of the Sefer of the Yod Al Yonah with the two options, that's limited to the Lokeach and doesn't apply to the Mocher. Itmar, in any event, we learned in the Beis Medrash, Omer Lechavero. Now this introduces a whole new dimension to the laws of Onah. And by way of introduction, I would say that Masna Mashkos B'Torah Tno Batel means that there is a limit to how far a person could go when he enters into a transaction with adding conditions. Not every condition is acceptable and valid. In fact, I would say that there's a condition built into every condition, and that is that the condition has to be reconcilable with the view of the Torah. And if the Torah says that there's no allowance for Onah, zero tolerance for Onah, whenever Onah applies, whatever the shear of Onah is, then that means that you don't have the ability to enter into a sale with a condition that is unacceptable to the Torah law. The Torah envisions Mechira selling with the din of Onah and the rights of Onah and the Isra Onah, and you want to create a whole new kind of a Mechira that circumvents the law of Onah. That's called Masna Mashas Kosev Torah. And what I just presented now is really, in essence, the Sheet of Rav, HaOmer L'Chavero. I'm selling you this object with a built-in condition that there is no Onah. And again, it doesn't matter who made this condition, whether it's the Mocher or the Lokeach. Is Rav Omar Yesh Lo Lof Onah? There's no way that you can undermine and cancel the law of Onah. Again, you might ask the following naive question, I think it's a very valid question. Why does Rav say that we're changing the laws of the Torah over here? I mean, there is a din of mechila. If the lokeach says to the mocher, this is how much I'm paying you, you know, I'm not paying you the market value. Or the mocher says to the lokeach, look, ein lecha lai onah, I'm selling it to you and you'll have to be mocher li onah if there is onah. Is mechila certainly is operative. So that we'll see in Mirtz Hashem when we turn to the first line on Nun Aleph Amid Beis, which hopefully we'll get to pretty soon, to try to clarify, we'll flesh out the Sheet of Rav. Now we have to go over to the Sheet of Shmuel. Shmuel now becomes a little bit more attractive within the context of Mechila. Ushmuel Amar Ein Lo Olav Onah, meaning since this condition was spoken out between the Mocher and the Lokeach up front, you know, prior to or at the moment of the Mechira, then Mechila is an element that really should kick in over here. And the reason for that is because we're not changing the law, we're just adding Mechila into the picture. But then again, if that's what Shmuel has in mind, then you wonder why Rav would have disagreed with this. I mean, are they arguing about whether there was a Mechila or not a Mechila? What is the nature of their argument? But before we get into that, and I hope, Mirtz Hashem, we will, let's point out up front that we're not sure whether the Machlokas Shin Rav and Shmuel fundamentally, Yesodo Shel Davar, is an Iser Veheter kind of Machlokas about the nature and the scope of the Iser Lo Sonu Ishes HaMiso, or it's a pure Dini Mominus question about the rights of the Mis'ana to claim Onoah. And the Nafkamina is, and this is a Machlokas Shin Rabbeinu Chananel and Tosfos, who do we pascha like in this machlokas? Because if it's a machlokas that's fundamentally anchored in Iser Veheter, and we're debating here, Rav and Shmuel, about the nature and the definition of the Iser Onoah, then halacha kerab b'isure. In a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, the overriding rule is that we pascha like Rav and Isure. There's another rule that in a machlokas in Dini Momenos, Shmuel's the boss, he's the final word, and we pascha like Shmuel against Rav. So Rabbeinu Chananel, for his part, paskins like Rav, he says, halacha kerab b'isure. Tosis, on the other hand, we'll get to it later on, Daf Nun Alpha Beis, says that we paskin like Shmuel, because halacha kishmuel b'momenos. And Tosis adds another whole nofach to this whole discussion. He says that both Rav and Shmuel would agree that you're not allowed to cheat someone. They're not arguing on the level of Isur Torah and the Isur Losonu. Their machlokas is whether or not the ma'ana has to replace the money to the mis'ana, to the nis'ana, and that's a pure dini monis machlokas and halacha kishmuel bedina. In any event, at this point, and we're back into the Gemara, there's a critical turning point in this sugya, this sanya, that Lema Rav di Omar, Kirabi Meir Shmuel Omar, Kirabi Yehuda de Sanya. We're now going to quote a Bryce and try to pin the various shitas here of Rav and Shmuel, respectively, onto a machlokas tanoim between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, which is really basically saying that Rav and Shmuel are not discovering a new issue, but this issue is an old one that predates them. And the issue emerged in the laws of Kiddushin. I always say when you learn Dini Mominus and Masechta Bava Metzia, it always comes back to Masechta Kiddushin. Ha'omer li'isha re'at mekudeshes li'almanas she'en loch olai sher k'sus vi'ona ha'rezu mekudeshes utano batel. This is the opinion, Divrei Reb Meir, that you cannot change the Torah law. The Torah has plotted out and designed, carved out the law of Ishus and what Ishus is. And Ishus includes Sherksus Viona. Now again, as far as Ona is concerned, we'll soon see that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you can't play around with the Iser of Ona. Rashi points that out on the last few words on the page. But as far as sharing susa are concerned, those are purely monetary obligations. And if the husband wants to waive his monetary obligations in the context of issues, we would think that maybe he could do such a thing. Comes along Rabbi Meir and he says, Tano Bata, we have a principle of Masna Masha Kosuba Torah Tano Bata. You cannot change the Torah law, neither with regard to Isa Veheter, which would be Ona in this particular case, nor with regard to Dini Mominus. To envision a marriage, a non-Ishus, and validate it halachically, even though there are no obligations, as far as the husband supporting his wife, to alleviate the husband of supporting his wife, you're tampering with and trying to change the Ishus of the Torah. Rav Meir says the Torah doesn't recognize such a thing. And we're going to try to link up Rabbi Meir, align him with Rav, because Rav says he can't change a mechira and envision it without the law of Onoah. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says, Omer b'davar shebemamon tano kayim, even though we have an overriding rule of Masna Mashakosu b'Torah tano batel, the exception to the rule is Dini Mominos. The Torah gave carte blanche in Dini Mominos. The Torah may have given recommendations, but now the Machna and the Kona have rights and authority to manipulate and recreate the laws of Mammon to fit their own personal subjective needs. To no kaim, they can make any conditions that they want. Again, as I said before, Rashi points out very well here that as far as Ona is concerned, not Ona, but Ona, is Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you can't tamper with the law. That's already Isur Veheter. Rashi calls it Tzara Guflo Nitan LeMechila. By the way, the very fact that Rashi introduces Mechila here seems to indicate, but I don't know, it's a little tricky, that Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rashi, is operating within the context of Mechila. And he's saying that she accepts the Kedushin without Sher Ksus, and on that she could be Mochel. But Ona, that's Tzara Guf, there's no Mechila on Tzara Guf. And even though she ostensibly accepted that condition, that acceptance is not valid. And even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you can't tamper with the law of Ona. That's built into the essence of Ishus, and that's Masna Mashakosu Matorah. The Brisker Rav has in his Sefer on the Rambam, Chidushei Mor Nagri, a lot of discussion about this principle of Masna Mashakosu Matorah. And I would point out that I'm a little confused about one thing, if anyone wants to research this. Rabbi Meir, who says that even in Dini Momenos, there's no flexibility here, and there's no ability to create a condition that changes the law, how does that square with the case of Shomrim, where the Mishnah establishes that Masna Shomer Chinam Lios Kishoel, or Masna Shomer Soch Lios Kishomer Chinam, that although the Torah created guidelines for the Chiyuvim and the Achrayas of Shomer Chinam, Shomer Soch, etc., you can change that, and it's Kichomer Biyada Yotzer. It's like silly putty. You can redefine it and change the laws based on the agreement between the Machna and the Kona, between the Mafkid and the Nifkad. So I don't know what Rabbi Meir is going to say about that. And as a general question, we have to know what the nature of this machlokus is, what at root is the machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and the Rashbin Ksubis seems to explain, again, maybe you could reinterpret the Rashba, but the way he's understood by the Achronim is that the machlokus here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is not really a fundamental machlokus, it's really a machlokus in Havonas HaLoshon, in Dine Lishonos, what was understood when the man said, the Makadish said to the Miskadeshes, Almanashe Ein Loch Olai Sher Ksus. Everybody agrees, that's not an issue, that you cannot be Mafkia Chiyuve Torah, that you can't do. The question is, what did he mean? What did he have in mind? Did he have in mind that, you know, she has to be mochel on her rights to share and ksus? What did he have in mind that he wants to be mafkia the chiyuv itself? Not mechila, but the chova. In other words, the chova shouldn't emerge. You know, one way of understanding it, and this is the way the Rashba understands Rav, is that Almanashe Ein Loch Olai Sher Ksus means that this Ishus should not generate a chiyuv of Sher and Ksus. He tried to be mafkia the chiyuv itself. And that, says Rabbi Meir, you cannot do, even though it's a chiyuv mama. Rabbi Yehuda would also agree fundamentally that if that's what he meant to do, if that's how he interpreted his language, then he can't do it. He doesn't have the he's not empowered to do so. No, Rabbi Yehuda has a reinterpretation of what he meant. What he meant when he says, Ein loch olai sher ksus v'yona, he doesn't mean din sher ksus v'yona, he doesn't mean chiyuv sher. The chiyuv definitely emerges. He can't tamper with that. That's beyond his ability. But what he's asking for is, even when the chiyuv emerges, she will automatically be mochel on her rights to collect sher and ksus. And the truth is that the Achronim are not excited about the Rashba, the way I presented the Rashba to you. Maybe you could reinterpret the Rashba. And the one who really makes a big deal about this is the Ktzos HaChoshen. He thinks he has a Ramban that is totally different in his understanding of this Machlok's review the Rameh than the understanding of the Rashba. That's the claim of the Ktzos HaChoshen. And after the Ktzos is medayik in the Lashon of the Ramban, if anyone wants to look up this Ktzos, it's a very fundamental Ktzos. It's in Simon Reish Tes, Sifkat Yud Aleph. And he understands from the Ramban's language, the Machlokas would apply even if he said explicitly, Al Menashe Ein Loch Olai Din Sher Ksus V'yona. Add, says Ramban, from my point of view, I'll give you the luxury of adding the word Din Sher Ksus V'yona. If they add the word Din, then on the one hand, we clearly understand Rabbi Meir, because he's trying to be Mafki himself for the very Din, the Chiyuv. And in the case of Ono, we're going to say that Rav, to the extent that he's identified with Rabbi Meir, is also saying that he was trying, the Mocha was trying to
completely undermine the din and the chiyuv onah, and that he can't do. So we understand Rabbi Meir very well if he had the word din. Where does Rabbi Yehuda come in? And here's where the Ketzel says his famous chiddush, that since there is halach of mechila, that changes the entire nature of masna mashikos of the Torah. You can change the din. The Torah allows you with a certain, you know, maneuverability, and it's malleable to take a kedushin and change it as far as it's very mechayev, as far as it's basic dinim, or to change mechira as far as it's basic mechayev and dinim. Says Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah allows you to with regard to mamon, because mamon is nitan lemechila. And even if you're changing the kiddushin, you're changing the mechira the way the Torah envisioned it, nevertheless, from desvegi, Rabbi Yehuda allows you to do so, and you have the power and the authority to do so because of the possibility of mechila. It wasn't that the tnai was, hey, you Mr. Lokeh be mochel, you Mrs. Kadesh be mochelis. No. There was no discussion of mechila, but the theoretical concept of mechila proves that there's room to change the very basic chiyuvei mamon that the Torah envisions. Amalecha Rav. Now the Gemara wants to say that, you know, each one, Rav and Shmuel respectively, can work out their shittas according to everyone, which means Rav is going to try to work square with Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel with Rabbi Meir. Omel Charav, Ano Adi Amri Afilu Le Rabbi Yehuda, Ad Kan Lokom Rabbi Yehuda Hosom, Ela Di Yada Vikamachla. Again, this makes a lot more sense according to the Rashba's understanding, that the whole thing is about Mechila, and the Mocher's request or condition that the Lokech accept the Onah and be Mochel. It's not going to work out so smoothly or so easily according to the Ketzos and the Ramban, because here we're talking more about din. We're not talking about yodo machla. We're talking about a din. You know, that the din itself should be that she has no, he has no chiyuv of sharing ksus, and she has no rights to sharing ksus. Again, I think what the Ramban is going to have to say is that since in this particular kedushin, It's absolutely crystal clear that she understands that there is mechila here. Meaning, again, not mechila befall, but that certainly this kedushin, as far as sharing ksus, lends itself to mechila. It's a definite mechila, and therefore it lends itself to changing the din, even as far as the chiyuv is concerned. Again, that's a bit of a stretch, but that's called yada v'kamachla. And now we turn to Daf Nun Aleph Amid Beis Aval Hocha. Here in the case of Onah, mi yada de machil. Right now, the market price, you know, is assumed to be X, and the buyer assumes that he's paying a fair price. The seller said to him, "Look, my friend, you know, you should accept this price irrevocably, you know, without your rights of honor. I can't tell you what the real price is, but I don't want to be bothered, so to speak. I don't want to be hassled here by honor, by claims of honor. This is going to be this sale is final, period. No refunds, etc. Is there for me, yada de machil? You know, you can't say that, again, using the Rashba's frame of reference at least, that the lokeach understood full well that he's being overcharged, and yet he waived his rights. He was mochel. No, he probably convinced himself that there is no onah in this mekach. It's a little bit strange, because if the mocher explicitly said to him, "Look, I don't want you to claim onah," and he, the lokech, accepted that condition, then even if in his own heart he's somehow living he's convinced himself that there is no onah in this mekach, dvarim shebelev lo avi dvarim, you know, on the surface level, it seems that the lokech was mochel. And yet, the way Rav interprets from you, who would agree to Rav, he never was really mochel, because he never understood that there was a reason to be mochel. Well, you know, you did accept the deal. I mean, dvarim shebelev lo avi dvarim. Maybe, I don't know, what Rav means to say over here is that there's a halacha called asmachta lo kanya. Again, I'm not equating the two, but just like asmachta lo kanya, person enters into a deal thinking X, Y, and Z, and he's convinced, so that in such a case, even though he's convinced himself, you know, he's going to win the game and cash in the money, that's not a real das, according to halacha. You know, asmachta lo kanya means the chisaron in das. So if his mechila was based on, you know, just making the mocher happy to clinch the deal, but he really, really believed that there was no room for the mechila, no need for the mechila. Maybe that mechila is like an asmachta lo kanya. There's no das. I don't know. Ushmuel Amar Anodi Amri Afilu Le Rabbi Meir. I can square even with Rabbi Meir, even though Rabbi Meir says you can't tamper with the laws of kedushin, even as far as the chiv mamon is concerned. Ad kan lo kamar Rabbi Meir Hosom El Devadei Ka'akar. Aval Hocha Miyemar De Ka'akar Midi. When does the Torah set up this rule that Masla Mashikosav Bat Torah is Tno Batel? You cannot contravene the Torah law. That's only because you are in a head-on collision, an absolute, unconditional condition. Devadei ka'akar, you're definitely being oker the Torah law. If you're saying, for example, I'm going to lend you money and the shvius, the shmita, when it comes, will not be mishamit techov. That's a vadei ka'akar. And even though it's dini mominos, and even though the lova could be mochel and pay up the chov in any event, nevertheless, you can't change the Torah law. Even in Dini Mominos. And even Rabbi Yehuda would agree to that. However, only because it's a Vade Ka'akar. You know, if you're saying that this Halva, which is going to definitely pass the Shemitah date, is not going to be Meshameh, that then you're changing the nature of Halva, the nature of Shemitah law. That's called Vade Ka'akar. But here, in this case, it's not a situation of Vade Ka'akar. Don't know whether there is Ono or not. In the case of Kedushin, you're definitely being Oka the Chiv Sher Ksus, which emerges in a definite, absolute way with the Kedushin. But in the case of Ono, will there be rights of Ono? Will there not? Is there a claim of Ono? Did he overcharge him, etc.? This we don't know. So the way he formulated his condition, I'm talking about the Mocher, to the Lokeach, according to Shmuel, Ein Lo Olav, he said to him, "Amanasha ein lecha lai ona." Again, I'm not undermining the and contravening head on the Torah law. I'm not being okay the law of ona, because we don't know in our case whether this whole condition is going to be real. It's going to come to fruition or not. So Shmuel's reinterpretation of Rabbi Meir is a study, an inquiry into the laws of Masal Mashkosav Torah. And what Shmuel's insisting on is Masna Mashkos Betorah, which is certainly being invoked by Rabbi Meir in the case of Kedushin Amanashe and Lechalai Sheikh is a Vade Ka'akar. That's when we say it's a Tanai against the Torah law. But if it's not a Vade Ka'akar, then even Rabbi Meir would agree, like in the case of Onoah, that he's not changing the nature of the Mechira law. He's not explicitly saying, forget it, dump the law of Onoah in this Mechira. No. It's a different kind of thing. And again, the way the Rashba might say, we could introduce the concept of Mechila within the context of Shmuel, and Shmuel says that certainly Rabbi Meir would agree to Mechila. Now, there's a long discussion here in the Ritva. He wants to say that Beofen Shalokeh Chefetz, Beofen Shalokeh Chafetz Miod B'mekach V'shavalo Adovar Af B'mechir Kazeh. He introduces another variable into the sugi. This is not Rashi, that the Lokeach wanted the Mekach, and it was worth it even at that price. So when the Mocher said to Lokeach, Amanash Eim Lecha Olai Ona, there is an implication that there will be Ona, and even though there is a shear of Ona in this Mekach, it's possible that there's no violation of Onah here. Now, why is that so? Again, you know, we're going quite to Shmuel. He's allowing for this condition to be valid. The Ritva's understanding that means there's no violation of the Isra Onah, even though there is a Shir Onah here. And the answer is that the Lokeach was so desperate that he was willing to buy this object at any price. He was so attracted and such an you know, a need for him to satisfy his whatever needs, psychological needs, to buy and be the owner of this object, he's willing to pay the higher price. And it would seem from the Ritva that when the Lokeh comes by later on with a claim of Onah, he's kind of being mechadish the parish of Onah. No, it's Mistama, there is no din of Onah. Like, for example, in Karkos, we say, Ain't Onah b'Karkos. You know, if you want to buy, if somebody's out there, you know, looking for real estate, and he needs to buy, you know, a piece of property, an estate in a certain location, he's going to pay whatever he has to pay. The sky's the limit. There really is no Onah. And that logic could apply even to Metaltalin and Atakarka. The only thing is, the Torah gave a separate nuschus for the Mis'ana to come by, the Lokeh could come by at some point, and claim Onah. He's being mechadish the din of Onah. But as far as the real Onah built into the Mekach, well, you know, to the whatever extent the Lokeach needs that Chafetz and wants that Chafetz, he's willing to pay the higher price. The Torah gave him rights to claim Onah. Says Shmuel, if within the context of that Mechira and the condition that the Mocher stipulated, the Lokeach waived his rights to be Mechadish Onah, then there's no violation of the Iser Onah, because it was, you know, it was an assumption on that part that the Lokeach accepted this Onah from the get-go. There's no violation of Onah because Lokeach is very desperate to purchase this object at any price. Omar Rav Anan, Lididi Mefarshin Olimineh Demar Shmuel. I'm going to explain the dinim of Shmuel. Maybe it means that he heard from Shmuel himself exactly what he meant, what Shmuel meant. Ha'omer l'chaveh Menashe Ein lo cha olai onah, Ein lo olav onah. Al Menashe Ein bo onah, Harei yesh bo onah. You have to add a very important subclause, an additional paragraph to Shmuel's presentation. Shmuel agrees that if the Mocher tells Lokeh there's no Onah here in this Mekach, and he lied to him, and in truth there was Onah to this Mekach, then that's not the case in which Shmuel accepts the condition and validates it, and because the Lokeh accepted it. No. Here in this case, what the Mocher said to the Lokeh is that there is no Onah in this Mekach. In such a case, certainly the Lokeach has rights to be chozer bo and get the heck out of this mechir and cancel it, because it turns out that this was Ramos and there was Onah in the Mekach. And in a certain sense, you could say that beyond the regular classical dinim of Onah, which apply in this Mekach, there's also a din that the Mis'ana has another claim against the Mocher. There was a condition built into the sale that there would be no Onah. So, you know, forget about the parish of Onah. Even if you bracket the parish of Onah and it doesn't exist, nevertheless, the Lokeh certainly has a right to be Mavatel the Mekach, because there was an explicit cheating here that was going on. And the Lokeh certainly didn't have Das Makne, Das Kone to buy it at that price. The Ritva says that, after all, what exactly is the chiddush here? I mean, he's mislabed. He's working very hard to understand, you know, why Shmuel had to tell Rav Anan that if the Mocher says to Lokeh there is no overcharging and he lied to him that the Mekach is batel. Says the Ritva, the chiddush is that even if the cheating was less than a shtus, where in Dinei Onah there would not be a possibility of being mevatel the Mekach, as we learned back on Daf Mem Tes. Here, in a case where the Lokeh was misled explicitly, he has the right, the Lokeh, to be mevatel the Mekach. That's a gevaldik chiddush, even though it was less than a shtus. And let's just point out here that in the case of Almanas She'ein Bo Onah, it could be, and this you have to look in the Rashba, it could be that Almanas She'ein, there's a case of Ein Lecha Olai Onah, correct? And that might be, according to the Rashba, a built-in Mechila, and then the Tanai is kind. But if he says Almanas She'ein Bo Onah, it means al menas, this is the Rashba's Loshon, shlo yochul b'mekach ze iser ona. Wow. In other words, the mocher says to lokeach that I'm telling you up front, there's no iser ona in this mecher. And obviously, Shmuel himself will have to agree that that's not a valid condition. You can't change the iser of the Torah. Like, for example, a person lends money, as we said before, and he says the shvius is not meshamen, al-menash lo tshamteni shvius, is the Gemara established at the beginning of Makkos, is tno kayim. He can't be mevatel the din and the mitzvah of shvius. That he can't do. So now to say, well, I'm selling this to you on the condition that there is no iser ona. You can't, you don't have control to tamper with the iser ona. And that we said before, the whole machlokas of Rav and Shmuel is only as far as chiyuve mamon is concerned. At this point, Rabosai, we're up to Meisve, and in the context of Meisve, we have a Braisa that seems to contradict the Sheet of Rav, and Amir Tz Hashem will pick this up in the next Shia.